Good morning, historians from around the internet. Welcome back to the Old History Podcast. So I've decided to take my podcast back to Anchor. It's the one I started using in the first place when I first started the podcast. Honestly, I'm just a lot happier using this program. Shut up, Microsoft. It's just a better program to use. I like it. It was better than the other program, and we'll just leave it at that. So using Anchor, I have it set up to where you can support the podcast pretty easily if you like old history, if you want to support your internet historian. I think it's called Listener Support, and I'll put a link to it on the Old History Facebook page for those of you. Anyway, before we begin, please go give my good friend Jason, the Beard Guy and Friends, a look-see. He's a good friend of mine, always takes care of me. Now, you men out there growing your beard out in the winter, you might need something, you know, a down-home product if you want to support your small business, you know, a down-home product to take care of your beard. And Jason's the man to go to. Beard Guy and Friends. Look him up on Facebook. All right, so one of the things we've talked about pretty frequently here in East Tennessee, this is an important subject, is how certain things led to the Revolutionary War, the War for Independence. And one of the things we talked about was the French and Indian War, because there were a very few settlements in Tennessee at that time. One of them I've talked about actually just recently was Long Meadow over in Hawkins County, Tennessee. It was built before the Proclamation of 1763. So That makes it one of the oldest houses in the state, if not the oldest settlement in the state. I don't know that for sure, but that's just my opinion. So the following article I'm reading from ushistory.org, full credits to whoever wrote it. It's a great article. But just here's the timeline of things that we're going to be talking about over the next little while here. So the French and Indian War, basically France and Great Britain said, "This land is my land. This land is not your land," and they got into a big argument about it. And that took place in the mid-1750s all the way up to 1763, which is where the subject of today's podcast, the Proclamation of 1763, comes into play. Because this was an important stop on the road to American independence. So, and we'll just go ahead and start reading here. At the end of the French and Indian War in 1763, it was a great cause for celebration in the colonies because it removed a lot of ominous barriers and opened up a lot of new opportunities for our colonist ancestors. The French had almost effectively hemmed in the British settlers and had, from the perspective of the settlers, pitted the Indians against them because, and this is other stuff I've talked about, I actually have a first-hand account of something like this that may have happened. The French would buy and pay for scalps of settlers and tribes allied with the British settlers. And so these raids, these attacks would almost come out of nowhere. That's not always the case, but sometimes. Those are pretty frequent things that happened back then. So the first things on the minds of the colonists was that the Western frontier was now opened up to them, you know, because the French ceded that contested territory to the British. So colonists are like, okay, yeah, we'll be able to go to the Ohio River Valley, you know, the Mississippi, the Tennessee Valley, you know, because this pact was also called, or this proclamation I've heard called, was the Trans-Appalachia Pact, meaning that they could not settle over the Appalachian Mountains. But we'll get to that in a minute. So the Royal Proclamation of 1763 kind of pretty much just put some water on the fire. Whatever fire that they had, King George just kind of said no. It closed off the frontier to colonial expansion, and the king and his council presented the proclamation as a measure to calm the fears of the Indians who felt that the colonists would drive them from their lands as they expanded westward. So we all know what happened, you know, 20 and 30 years on down the road, even just 10 years later, whenever people started settling in the Tennessee Valley, in the state of Franklin started happening. We all know what happened. So many in the colonies felt that the object was to pin them in along the Atlantic seaboard, where they would be much easier to regulate. And there are a lot of things that came from this fear as well. And you'll see this on down the line as we go through all these events. So no doubt there was a large measure of truth in both of these positions. However, the colonists could not help but feel a strong resentment when what they perceived to be their prize was basically just kind of taken from them. The proclamation said and provided that all lands west of The proclamation provided that all lands west of the heads of all rivers which flowed into the Atlantic from the west or northwest were off limits to the colonists. This excluded the rich Ohio Valley and all territory from the Ohio to the Mississippi rivers from settlement. So basically, Tennessee, they couldn't come in here anyway. As at that time, most of this area was still considered to be dangerous Indian territory, and a few people, and I can't think of their name right now, had ventured into this territory on behalf of certain expedition companies in Virginia and North Carolina, and they'd get killed. There was already a lot of resentment between the Indians and the colonists, even by this time. So, but this goes back to plumb back into the 1600s, the 1500s even. So a lot of generational hate was built up by the time that this came along. Anyway, so the proclamation defined four new colonies, and three of them on the continent. And Quebec, which was, of course, already settled, and two colonies to be called East Florida and West Florida, and off the continent was called Grenada. These facts were established immediately, but most of the proclamation is devoted to the subject of Indians and Indian lands, and it asserted that all of the Indian peoples were thereafter under the protection of the king, and it required that all lands within the Indian territory occupied by Englishmen were to be abandoned immediately. It included a list of prohibited activities and provided for the enforcement of these new laws, and indicted the unnamed persons for fraudulent practices in acquiring lands from the Indians in times past. That's a whole podcast on its own, because that was part of the what's called the Indian Wars, which lasted from the first time of the first settlement all the way up into the 1900s. So, resolution of the hostilities of the French and Indian War was a difficult problem for the Crown, because most of the Indian tribes had been allied with the French during the war, and because they found the French less hostile. And generally more trustworthy than the English settlers. Now the French would, they left, and they went back up north, they went into Canada, and the Indians were left to defend themselves and their grounds as best they could. Relations between the native people and the English colonists were so poor that few settlers would argue in public that the Indians had rights to any lands. In this proclamation, the king sided with the Indians and against the perceived interest of the settlers. Moreover, it provided, and Parliament soon after executed British royal post along the proclamation boundary. Parliament was under no illusions about relations between the Indians and the colonists. They understood that the colonists would not respect the boundary without some enforcement mechanism. Finally, the English were interested in improving the fur trade, which involved the Indians naturally, and independent trappers who lived out on the frontier. The proclamation line extended from the Atlantic coast at Quebec to the newly established border at West Florida, establishing many manning posts along the length of this boundary. Now, this was a very costly undertaking. So the British ministry would argue that these outposts were for colonial defense, and as such should be paid for by the colonists. From the American perspective, this amounted to a tax on the colonies to pay for a matter of imperial regulation, And that was opposed to the interests of the colonies. And so this was another stop, you know. This was one of the first really hurtful subjects for the colonists. Now, the next thing to go on about would be, you know, the Sugar Act, the Stamp Act. There were two Stamp Acts. Got the Boston Massacre, you know, and then you have the Intolerable Acts, the Riot of Paul Revere, and then you start to get into the Revolution itself. But stuff like this, or stuff like that, this is when you get into a lot of the skirmishes between the British and the native people, such as you've heard of John Sevier was pretty hugely anti-Cherokee. This is where some of this stuff starts to come into play, because did our ancestors listen to the crown? No, they did not. They moved over the Appalachian Mountains anyway. And a couple of stories I've came across was took place right as this happened. Such as I have a story of, I think it's on the YouTube channel, an ancestor who came home as a child, or he was actually even outside, and basically him and his whole family were taken captive by Native Americans. And then you have, of course, this is more closer to the Potomac, and you know, but the Fort Saybert Massacre. But and then you get into you got to get into Daniel Boone and all that stuff. He befriended a lot of the native people. He went straight through Tennessee, came out in the Cumberland Gap, but that was in the 1770s. Anyway, so that's the end of the Proclamation of 1763. And the next big thing to cover, I guess, would be the Intolerable Acts, and we'll cover it next weekend. But I hope you guys enjoy this podcast, and I hope you like me being on Anchor. And remember, if you made it this far, consider, you know, supporting your favorite internet historian here. And lastly, I don't know if I said it in the first or not, but you'll hear it again. I've got exciting news coming, and I know I've been harping on that for the last 2 weeks, but I'm waiting on it to come in the mail. So every day at like between 11 and 12, I'm glued to the window. Can't say anything about it because I'm waiting on it to just come in the mail. People involved don't want me to say anything yet until I actually have it in my hand, so it would be official. So you guys will be so excited. This is going to open up a whole new avenue of stuff for old history, or stuff that I can do. So just stay tuned and bear with me. The UPS, USPS, this isn't cooperating. All right, so it's the end of the podcast. See you guys next Saturday.